Christy, by the end of this, you are going to be singing the praises of Rocky III and Sylvester Stallone. Nope. I'm convinced.
Well, doomsday is coming.
Hello and welcome to the Greaties, the great 80s movie debate. We see if the movies of the 1980s still hold up today. If you're a child of the 80s, a fan of classic films, or just a movie geek, you've come to the right place. The focus of today's podcast is 1982's Rocky III, written and directed by Sylvester Stallone and starring Sylvester Stallone, Talia Shire, Burgess Meredith, Burt Young, Carl Weathers, and introducing Mr. T. My name is Dave, and our illustrious panel of 80s experts includes Christy,
the Mountain of Molten Lust,
Matt.
Hey guys, what do you say after the podcast? We get a Polaroid together.
Steve.
My prediction is pain.
And Chris.
Ding, ding.
That's Matt's line. We would like to start every show by having each panelist reflect on their past experience with the movie we're discussing so we can see where everyone is coming from. So, Christy, what is your history?
Yes.
What is your history? Your long and storied history.
2 days ago.
With Rocky III.
Yesterday. I saw it yesterday.
For the first time?
For the first time.
Okay. More on that later.
Moron is right.
It's a brief story.
Matt, what about you?
I saw it on video. I don't think I was allowed to see this in theaters, which is odd because my parents took me to see the original Rocky when I was 5. So I don't know why that was okay and this was not. But I eventually caught up with it on videotape, and I think it's like when Rocky IV finally came out on videotape, I did the whole series in one shot a long time ago.
Nice.
Awesome.
This is before you were married, I assume.
Long before I was married.
Hell yes.
Well, Steve, what about you?
Well, I came to the Stallone game late, but once I did, I was decked out. I'm proud to say that I spent a year of my life watching one Sylvester Stallone movie a week until I had seen his entire catalog. So I consider myself to be a Stalloneologist. And more importantly, I got a chance to rewatch this movie this morning on the big screen at the movie theater that I'm a projectionist at part-time.
Very nice.
So I was able to digitally project it.
And, jealous.
And get it, you know, on the huge screen. Let me tell you, it lost nothing.
That is really doing your homework, Steve. And we appreciate that. And we are honored to have you here as you are the president and founder of the Stallone Club for Men.
That is true.
So thank you for joining us, Steve.
My pleasure. I'll see if I can lend any expertise.
Okay, well, Chris, what about you?
You can talk for me, Steve.
I love this movie.
No, don't talk for me. You can talk in my place.
Oh, okay.
You
so
can
sad.
Fill the space.
So sad. I remember this movie very well. This movie came out May 28th, 1982, and a week.
Are you reading from your journal?
A week later. Hold on. A week later came a movie that Matt probably loves, and maybe you too, Steve. Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. Of Khan.
Ooh.
Came out.
Or Khan.
I said of Khan. I changed my mind.
That was an incredible fortnight in the 80s. Holy shit.
My parents and I, my brother, went to the Eric Five in Allentown. We went in, saw Rocky III, came back out, paid, and went back in and saw Star Trek II.
Wow.
Nice. It was a great, great day in history.
Good on you.
Wow.
And you got a math lesson. 3 minus 1 is 2.
What?
Because he went to see the third and then he went to... Never mind.
Okay.
I got some wrath for you.
Well...
Sorry, I'll stop making threats.
I am proud to say that we take turns picking films, and panelist picks is what we've been calling them, and this was my panelist pick, and I'm proud to say that, Christy.
Well, you got to be proud of something.
This is...
It's uncalled for.
This is really the first Rocky movie I ever saw. I don't think most people our age saw them in order, except for me. Maybe for Matt, if he saw one. Did you see two in between?
No, I didn't see. I don't understand why my parents wouldn't let me go see two and three, but they took me to see one when I was 5, sitting in the back of the car in the old drive-in. So I don't know.
They wanted to see it.
That's pretty much what it came down to.
He'll fall asleep.
Well, this was the first Rocky movie I saw and did not see it in theaters, but saw it on cable, and it made a lasting impression on me. And it, in fact, was the second movie that I ever recorded onto videotape, and I watched it relentlessly. I probably had two or three movies, and I probably watched it every week. I'm going to guess I've seen this movie 50 times.
Wow. Guaranteed, yeah.
What about you, Chris? You
think? 51.
Well,
a lot. Yeah. A lot.
I mean, it was Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and Rocky.
This movie was like a major part of our childhood in the 80s. Exactly. Those three movies. I mean, if it had a Rocky in the title, that was
a there. Rocky.
Yeah. And it
the
was
The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Saw it.
Thought it was Rocky VI.
Rocketeer. Saw it by accident.
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Didn't see that. Matt, I went with Matt. Maybe I think to see that one.
Yeah, I think you did.
I did.
I was so stupid when
did
I was little.
Did you see the mask because the guy's name was Rocky?
No. But you know what's good, Dave? I think
you're
going to
say the same thing. I was so stupid when I was little. I thought that Rocky Horror Picture Show had something to do with Rocky.
But a horror movie.
Yeah, it was like a horror movie of Rocky.
I thought the same thing.
Because Rocky was on all the ads, and it was a big, strong guy. And I was like, is that the next opponent? So you can imagine my surprise when I saw that for the first time.
Tossing that bread or whatever.
I thought Rocky Marciano had taken his name from Rocky Balboa.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up. I was going to bring that up later. And it's one of the things to me that makes the fact that I think that this is a compelling story and that Stallone has done a good job in the making of these films, that a lot of people, young people especially, and I work with young people, think that Rocky Balboa is a real person. Huh. Have you come across that?
What do you mean he's not?
He has a statue.
I love it.
Well, we're going to talk about that statue later.
Oh, but, boy.
I picked this movie because it really was part of the foundation of my lifelong passion for movies. Yeah. And you know, I guess this is like really, like you said, it was Harrison Ford and Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
And when we were 10, those were like our stars. Like it or not, Christy.
Well,
10. 37 now.
Well, but this is like, for me, the building blocks or, you know, the keystones, if you will, of my movie watching life.
The establisher of your taste were it.
Maybe. And not to mention the fact that I do love boxing. It's really one of the real reasons to subscribe to HBO. But another reason I picked this movie is I really wanted to talk about some of the things about Stallone, especially with someone like Christy, who's not a real fan, because I feel that he has been maligned over the years in his writing, acting, and directing. But I think that this is the perfect Rocky movie. And hopefully by the end of it, I will have explained what I mean by that.
Mm. I'll be drinking the Kool-Aid by the end. That's what you're thinking, huh?
That's right. By the end of this, you are going to be chanting.
Oh, I'll be chanting something.
All right. Well, and it starts out right away. And I know exactly how Chris feels, too, because he's a disciple. As soon as you see that United Artists symbol come on, and that little jingle plays.
Yeah.
Which you will never see again.
That's right.
Right, right.
You know it's business time.
And you know it's a Rocky movie, yeah.
Yeah, if you're in the other room and you hear that come on, you go, what, is Rocky coming on?
Yeah. Followed by the trademark recap.
That's right.
Yes, that's what those movies make them fantastic. And they always start how the last one ended, which was perfect.
Yeah,
because they want to make sure that people with short-term memory disorder don't forget.
Uh-oh.
No, it's called good storytelling.
Oh, it's not called eating up time in the film because you don't have enough script to fill
in this corner, Dave,
and
that corner, Christy.
Because I will say this, the Rocky movies are truly not separate movies. It's one big movie.
You got it.
One big, long-ass movie.
I mean, every movie except for Rocky and Rocky Balboa has the recap, like Steve said at the beginning.
Where does the robot fit in all this?
Yeah, you know.
Well, the robot, you can't defend the robot.
The Harry Potter movies don't include recaps, do they? Inferior.
Take that.
So that would mean the Star Wars saga is inferior, too. Is that what you're saying?
It's only three movies long. How can it possibly compare?
It's six.
Is it?
Well, I'm with you there. No, it is not. But
I don't mean to derail and go into that. Sorry.
Well, if you hear,
I want to see if we can get Chris involved in the fight here.
Oh, I'm sitting back.
Isn't it pretty much three movies and then a couple movies of the week?
Are you talking about Star Wars? Listen, we're talking about Rocky, okay?
That's right.
I didn't start it.
He's gonna finish.
She's right.
It.
I did.
If
I'm
you
sorry.
If
Don't
you ask,
unleash your hate on me.
Oh, I will be. If you ask Stallone now whether you believe him or not, because there's a tinge of George Lucas to this. He has always said he envisioned the Rocky series as one that comes full circle. Starts, you know, at the bottom as an underdog, gets to the peaks of his career, and ends up back where he started. So he's always said that this was the plan for the whole thing, just like George Lucas did. Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I believe that as much as I love him, but does anyone... I mean, I know how Matt feels. Does anyone else feel that way?
No, I gotta say, I think that's pretty much malarkey as well. But with, you know, utmost respect for the guy, but I think that the original Rocky ends at a perfect place. And it's mature enough to say, well, I'm not going to give the guy a total victory. You're just going to have to be happy with what he did get, which is often how life goes. The end. Could have ended there. I believe that about as much as George Lucas saying he always envisioned Boba Fett playing a major role. That's no, that was fan dictated later.
Right.
It may have been the original intention, but then somebody went, why, what would you say if you saw this many zeros?
Yeah.
Sure.
And some silk pants. Yes.
Well,
yes, I'll do it.
Oh, don't even start with impressions. Because we're going to talk about the acting. We're not going to talk about it now, though. I got a question, though, for pretty much
That's
everybody.
Be a short conversation.
No, it's not. Sorry, it's going to be a long conversation. Do we? I mean, Christy really can't answer this, but the four of us can. Do you think that we care more about Rocky because we are from the Philadelphia suburbs?
Yes.
I think it helps, yes.
There's a lot of stuff in there that I appreciated that I know I didn't even bother mentioning to her.
Okay. And you think, I mean, Christy, you grew up in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were little, you had to have known about Rocky.
I had heard of him, yes.
Now, do you think, now you're speaking for everyone else in the country other than Philadelphians. Are you comfortable with that?
No.
Well, you have to.
Yeah,
I can speak for everybody.
You have to realize when you say she grew up in Hawaii, you need to say she grew up in the past as well. They're a little behind.
Yes. We're at least 10 years behind everything else.
Well, growing up where we've grown up, not that we live in Philadelphia, but close enough that I know I was there constantly, these things cement in your head, and they, I know they mean a lot to me. And maybe that's something that we've built it up as, you know, part of our childhoods that other people in the country haven't done.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's a Philadelphia staple. I mean, you can go to a dozen places in the city and go, oh, Rocky II. Oh, that's from Rocky III. Oh, that's from the original, you know.
But we must remember that Sly belongs to the world.
That's well put.
Thank you. He is one of Philadelphia's best exports.
Even though he's not from Philadelphia.
I was going to say, he's not from Philadelphia.
Sorry, his character, well, you know, Philadelphia chooses to believe that, you know, the fictional character is...
I'm sorry, but the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air would be mine, because in West Philadelphia, born and raised on the playground. Yeah, see, that's for me.
Okay.
Philadelphia.
All right. Right. Will Smith's never been a whore for a franchise.
Oh, he is, but at least you expect it.
The fact that Men in Black 3 is being filmed
right now
as we speak.
Yeah.
Yay!
Yeah.
All right, well, back to Stallone.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, you get the right after that, you have the recap of Rocky II and how he comes to be heavyweight champion of the world. Now, Christy, had you seen Rocky II? Did you have any idea what was going on at the start of this movie?
I think,
you know,
over the years, I think I've gathered that.
I hate to admit, I think I was able to catch up to speed in about 10 seconds.
Yeah, he was like... He beat this guy. He's a world champion.
Lost to him, and then he came back and he beat him. And all right, here we go.
All right.
Eye of the Tiger. Let's go.
Okay, well, you get the Eye of the Tiger montage. And
and why is that a different version of the song than we've come to know for all these years?
Well, it's funny because in doing the research, Stallone wanted, Christy, you would appreciate this. He wanted Another One Bites the Dust.
Yeah.
I would have appreciated that.
And you're a Queen fan. And then the second song that was going to be used was one that became famous in another movie, is You're the Best.
I kept singing that, too.
Well, that was written, I guess, for Rocky III, and Stallone said he didn't like it and ended up becoming a famous part of Karate Kid. But they settled on this, and I'm going to say right now, and if you argue with me, I will strike you down. This is an awesome montage, and it's excellent directing.
Now, Chris, you have to admit, this had the only part of the movie you truly liked.
Kermit?
Yes, it did, because there was Muppets.
Yep.
That. Dave, I got to say, when you talk about Rocky montages, you have to narrow it down, because there are a lot.
Okay.
There are at least three in Rocky III alone.
Yes.
And two of them are training.
Yes.
Yes.
And I have to think, I have to say, and I'm sorry, Dave, I have to disagree, but I think my favorite is his training in Russia.
That is cool.
The just position between his training in the cabin and Ivan Drago's training in the, like, super scientific, you know, high-tech gym.
Right. And it's interesting in that in Rocky IV, the roles will be reversed. I mean, he is doing now what Drago was kind of doing, and Clubber Lang is doing what Rocky does.
I have to see that too, watching that last night.
I have to say, during the montage, though, I did start singing the South Park montage song. Yeah, Team America. Motherfucking montage. It's a montage.
This is a great part of the movie, though, because it's really taking 3 years of his life and condensing it into, you know, 5 minutes. He has 10 title defenses, and you get all these endorsements, and you automatically know how his life is changing. It's really, I think, economical and well done.
He's a star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and the Muppet thing, I mean, all those things, it was really clever how they used real Stallone ads and appearances on the Oscars and things like the Muppets. And I read that Jim Henson actually does appear in this movie if you really want to take it that way.
Really?
I heard they changed
it's not
going
to make me watch it again.
Well, this is a Jim Henson film. He says they took out where, you know, they introduced Stallone, and it's Jim Henson's voice saying Rocky Balboa.
Rocky Balboa!
Yeah, that's
it is, though. I rewound that, and I thought they just cut the name off.
No, yeah. It's Henson.
Oh.
That's what you get for watching the VHS version, there, Matt.
I guess.
So now that
next
you know,
next time upgrade to the Laserdisc.
Jim Henson is involved in this. Does that make you change your mind about the movie?
Nope.
Okay. Well, the one thing that I always kind of found strange about the difference between Rocky II and Rocky III is the way his body changes.
Oh, he is ripped and chiseled.
And they don't really ever discuss why it changes the way it does. I mean, there's a lot of research online about his workout regimen to get in the shape, but it was the best shape he was ever in his life. His body fat, they said, was 2%.
And just like the milk.
Yes, exactly. And Rocky and Rocky II, he's a big guy and he's muscular, but he's kind of frumpy.
Yeah.
And he just becomes an Adonis here, and they never really explain it.
He was jealous of Schwarzenegger.
You think that's what it was?
I think that Schwarzenegger kind of set a bar, too.
Right.
That he was cut. And now, I have to admit, if I'm going to say anything good about this movie...
Say it.
Nice to watch that scene.
Okay.
Where he's got his shirt off.
I agree.
Again, can you be more specific?
He could be on my moving team.
Oh, boy.
As long as he didn't talk. I didn't do that. That was more for the visual.
I haven't said anything for 10 minutes. I had to say something.
Well,
all agreeing that the Schwarzenegger Stallone rivalry had begun this early?
Well, I guess.
Or is that for another time, for another podcast?
I don't think Arnold was that popular in 82, was it that?
No. 82, yeah. He was still doing Conan and stuff.
84, I think, was the first Terminator.
Because right. I want to say that someday, and it's probably not tonight, but someday when the time comes, I will definitively put to rest this Arnold equals Sly ridiculousness.
Excellent.
There's no comparison.
Okay.
And Seagal.
Seagal?
Give me a break.
What?
No.
Fat with a ponytail? What?
Well, I'm just saying this. Any director that can cover this kind of time effectively and tells a story like this has done well. And I think he's an effective director in this montage, especially.
I think Sly is an effective screenwriter.
Exactly. Academy Award nominated screenwriter.
Mind
you.
Damn right.
Christy.
Did he win? No.
Oh, jeez. Well, he has 10 title defenses in 3 years, which is a little unrealistic by today's boxing standards. I mean, guys usually fight maybe once, if you're lucky, twice a year. He's fighting like 3 times a year, and they don't really do that anymore.
But they were handpicked.
Well, that's true. Yeah. And the one thing that kind of bothered me about Rocky 3 too is that in Rocky and Rocky 2 especially, they always make a big deal about how he has this eye injury. You ever notice that, Chris?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big part of Rocky 2, him protecting his eye. That's why Mickey has him fight right-handed.
Yeah.
And it's never mentioned once and ever again that he has this debilitating eye injury that
it
could
heals.
End his career.
It heals.
I believe Mickey says something about him having his face fixed up.
Paulie does, I think.
Oh, Paulie does. Okay.
Yeah, he says, you get your face fixed up real nice or something
right,
like that.
Right, okay.
Well, let's get to Paulie. We're going to talk about Paulie.
Met him.
Paulie.
Yes, Chris has met all of these people.
I have. I met Stallone. I met Tony Burton and Paulie.
Mm-hmm. How was Paulie? Was he just like this? Because to me, this is all he
can do. A little bit, yeah.
This is all he can do.
Just like a bum kind of guy. Yeah. Yeah, he was.
Have you ever seen Burt Young do anything else?
Always like gangster movies, but like nasty, like HBO kind of gangster films.
Yeah.
He was just in that movie Win Win, and he plays a guy who's like got the onset of Alzheimer's.
Really?
Yeah, so he's a little dopey, but it's pretty affecting.
Okay. Well, good. Because to me, he was always typecast.
Yeah.
But they always had a strange relationship. And the scene early in the movie where Paulie is now jealous and drunk again, it kind of puts to rest their relationship, really.
That was probably Matt's favorite scene in this movie.
With the arcade.
See all the arcade games in the background?
Yeah.
It was like the Tron arcade. what was your sense of Paulie as a newcomer, Christy?
Actually, I had seen him before.
Okay.
Oh. You've seen Rocky Balboa and liked it.
Yeah, I liked Rocky Balboa.
Okay. Well,
we're almost there, Dave.
Getting somewhere.
I just heard something sizzle in Dave's head there.
I'm just trying to understand.
I didn't love Rocky Balboa. I thought it was a decent movie.
Okay. Did you ever see the original?
I think I did.
Okay. Because they're very similar.
Yes.
All right.
Which makes me think I've probably seen it, but if I haven't, I've seen Rocky Balboa, which in fact means I've seen Rocky.
In a way.
So I don't have to now.
I don't know if I agree with that.
All right. Well, that's for another time then. But, you know...
Balboa had computer animation.
That's true. So...
Oh, I know. I saw Paulie in Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield. That's where I remembered him from.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yep.
Well, let's talk about Adrienne, because movie is a pretty big stepping stone for her as well. She's a lot different in this movie than the previous two Rocky movies. But there's a scene early where they're kind of in bed together, and he's being charming to her. And it's really kind of the way their relationship was in the first two movies. He can be himself with her, and he can be stupid, and he can be silly. That's when he is himself, when he's with her. And that was a nice scene because he really doesn't act like that for the rest of the movie.
No. Do, 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 do.
Rocky, stop it. You'll wake the baby.
That was pretty good.
So we can't do Rocky impressions, or we're allowed to do Adrienne impressions?
Apparently. Oh, wait till I start my...
Absolutely.
My Mickey ones.
Yeah. Oh boy!
I always thought that all these Rocky films, my favorite parts was always when Adrian told Rocky, "You can do it, kick ass, go get him."
But that's what I was saying. This is the first movie where she really does this.
In the
first two movies, she's very mousy.
She's shy and glasses on,
and he's always himself and charming to her.
Yeah,
and very funny.
He is.
I was wondering if you wouldn't mind marrying me too much.
May I say that... sorry, can I interrupt you?
Yes.
Okay. I found it didn't ring true in the second Rocky how she was absolutely dead set against him fighting until she went in that coma and then apparently had a long talk with herself. And when she came out of it, it was okay for him to go do his thing.
Right.
I felt like that was kind of unearned.
Okay.
But there's a redemption in Rocky 3 because while she may encourage him to not be afraid, she says, like, well, if you're not fighting for yourself, don't do it. We'll be fine.
Right.
That's very mature.
Yeah.
That was nice, Steve.
That's mature writing. Thank you.
And maybe it's his way of giving her something to do other than be mousy.
Right.
Because she was kind of underused in those movies. I mean, she was there for him to be charming to.
Yeah.
But the first actual long extended fight scene you see then is Rocky versus Thunderlips. And yeah. this is to me is a really fun scene to watch.
It is. It's cool.
And this is WWF, you know, at its rising fame. I mean, I was a fan at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think most young teenage boys go through a wrestling phase.
And some girls. Yes. Mm.
And Terry Hulk Hogan is playing Thunderlips, and he started out, I think, as a bad guy in wrestling, and was pretty good at playing the bad wrestler. But this scene is most important to me because of the foreshadowing in it, where you get to see Mickey have his first kind of like
chest pains. Yeah.
And it's important because of what will come later.
I have decided, though, there should be the Mickey Goldmill School of Motivational Speaking.
Uh-huh.
You're nothing! He's gonna kill you to death! And you're ugly, too.
Well, that's the way he motivates.
Yeah.
You got a problem with that?
He's got some incredible lines.
Having a stick up my ass would make me stand up. That doesn't mean I want it all the time.
That's the way he always
says
was,
you
though.
Don't have a stick up
is that,
your ass.
Is that a stick?
That.
I'm playing.
Yes, you did. You're sleeping on the couch. Yeah.
That might get edited out. Is that what you're saying? Matt's in control of this.
That's true.
Fearless spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're going to eat lightning and you're going to crap thunder.
So there you go.
My father's slowly
turning into
him. That was
a good impression.
Who
did that?
My father talks like him already. He's about as positive as Mickey is.
He says,
and
he's
shrinking.
Yeah.
The best part of that scene to me is when they show Mr. T sitting in the audience in his tuxedo.
And his feathers.
With the feathered earrings.
Yeah.
Now, was this the first time Pity the Fool was used?
That is a good question. Which came first?
Pity the Fool.
Pity the Fool or the A-Team.
Exactly, yeah.
That is a good question, and I had forgotten that he had said that in here. I associate that with A-Team.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I pity the fool.
It's in there. I think this is it. Because this is his, I mean, he's listed at the credits as introducing Mr. Yeah. T.
But he signed one of the band members' drums as Mr. T.
Yeah. There's a lot of film flubs in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And Chris spotted one in the band when there's a high school marching band. One of the drums has a Mr. T autograph on it.
Right on top of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
So if he was introducing him, why would they know who he is yet?
You know? It's just they probably signed it when they weren't rolling. And
right.
There's another one, too, where they, I guess during one of the fights, you can see Mr. T's chair. It says Mr. T on the back of it. You know, like his little
one.
Chair for in-between takes.
Yeah.
And stuff. There's a lot of film flubs in this movie. I'll post them all on our Facebook page because some of them are pretty funny. But
it actually was supposed to say Marty, but the A and the Y fell off.
There you go.
And you are. No,
but this is a funny scene. I always enjoy watching this scene, just like when they go face to face and it's really like eyes to nipples.
It was great. It was a great scene, and it was just cool. You know, when I laughed every time when Adrian, yeah, you're right, catch me. Like that part makes me smile.
Yeah,
every time.
No enjoyment for you, Christy.
Well,
how was Hulk Hogan?
That is a yes.
Shirtless.
I always like Hulk Hogan. He's always some sort of entertainment for me, and I did enjoy that wrestling piece because I just remember that time when Hulk Hogan and all of them were such a big deal.
That is a fun scene. I love that scene, especially Mr. T and his tux. Why is he even there? Like, I understand why he's going to Rocky's other bouts and scouting him. I mean, what is he getting out of watching this?
I like to put money in the charity, fool.
And he gets up and storms out after
he's mad,
draw. Like,
man.
He's mad that it's a draw.
That's right.
I never quite understood that. But the next major scene, then, is the art museum.
Ooh.
Steps. Now, this is a major scene for, I think, most people who have grown up around the Philadelphia area, but let's talk about the statue, because the statue has gone through a lot. over the years.
Yeah.
It was placed there at the top of the steps, and it was there for a while, and it was even brought back for the filming of Rocky V when he and his son go to the art museum, and he says, do you remember what he says?
And all this time, I didn't know there was like paintings in there.
And all this time, I didn't know there was valuable pictures in there.
Yes.
Anyway, it went over to the Spectrum, which is where the first two fights in the first two Rocky movies took place, the now defunct Spectrum, and it stood out front of there, and basically nobody wanted it. And the art museum...
I wanted it.
Well, the art museum people said that they did not want it there because it was not art. It was a movie prop. They sent it to the Spectrum, and the Philadelphia sports people said, we don't want it here because it's not real sports. It's a fictional character.
Disagree.
It went into storage for a while and now sits to the right of the art museum steps in a nice little garden area where you can go punch him in the groin like in, what was that called, Baby Mama, Dax Shepard. But who here has run up the Rocky step?
Oh,
which,
my
well,
God.
They're called the Rocky steps now.
Yeah.
Rather ask Dave who here hasn't.
Yes.
Exactly. It'd be a shorter conversation.
The one with the boobs.
Chris? Are you talking about Chris? That was mean.
Mama.
But yeah, I mean, it's a piece of Philadelphia and Philadelphia history.
You got to tell the story, Dave. Whenever you ask me to go to these sports events that I don't care about.
I am a big sports fan. Chris is not. And my father had season tickets to the Philadelphia Flyers hockey team, and they played at the Spectrum for a very long time. And he had the extra ticket, so I asked Chris, you want to go? No interest in the game. Only went to the game to see the Rocky statue. And we stood outside for a while, taking several pictures.
We did.
Went in to watch the game and left early because Chris wasn't interested. But you got to see the statue.
Oh, my God. I love that thing. I every time I go down to the zoo, after the zoo, got to drive over there.
You got to
see it.
You got to.
Run the steps, see the statue,
mm-hmm.
have a cheesesteak.
There is some good art in that museum, actually, as well.
Yes. We don't care about that, though.
No.
The only thing I don't like about this scene is that the band, the high school band that we mentioned, they're playing the Rocky song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a little...
Yeah, I wouldn't have gone in that direction.
Yeah. But... a little too self-aware. But the scene is great because now Rocky is accepting the statue and he's humbled by it and also announcing his retirement.
Again.
And Mr. T comes out of nowhere. And what a freaking awesome scene is that.
It's an awesome performance, man.
Mr. T is awesome in this movie. And
only in this movie.
Well, yeah. But to me, he is the best Rocky opponent.
Yes, he is. He's awesome.
He's so great. Now, you're an A-Team fan, aren't you, Christy?
Yes, I am.
You got to love Mr. T in this. Come on.
I love Mr. T.
In this?
And he happens to be in this.
Mm-hmm. That didn't sound like an endorsement.
Very promising.
What did it sound like, Dave?
Like you're skirting the issue.
I enjoy the work of Mr. T.
But you won't say something nice about this movie?
Mr. Lawrence Turow does a wonderful work. Whatever he does.
That's good research.
Thank you.
Well.
That is the first of a couple of racially charged scenes, actually, I think.
Okay.
They're like uncomfortable racial overtones. I think it's pretty cool that they tackle that. They put it in the person of Pauly to do.
Mm-hmm.
But that line where Clubber Lang is talking now to Adrian.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a clear, he is sort of the King Kong of that scene, if you will. You know, he is the black man leering at the white woman, and you can see the cops around him not taking it well. And that is finally the thing that goads Rocky into action.
Absolutely. Hey, woman. Hey, woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one thing that Rocky's kind of just, you know, you got a big mouth. And he just kind of stands there. But then when you start talking to Adrian.
Adrian, don't fuck with Adrian, man. That's it.
Yeah, eyes off the white woman.
And that too.
Well, I love that scene. I could watch it every day. It's really great, except for the band playing the Rocky theme. But it really lends you into the main problem in the movie is that Mickey as saying that, is saying that he will not endorse Rocky fighting this guy because the title defenses that he's had were kind of bogus.
Yeah, all fixed.
What do you think? Does that diminish Rocky as a boxer and a champion? I mean,
not in my eyes.
Well, he says the title defenses were a sham, and he told him he got the worst thing happened to him, and he got civilized. But there's some tender scenes between the two of them. Rocky and Mickey's relationship has always been kind of interesting. I mean, Rocky, you never know Rocky's family. You know, right. He doesn't have a family. Yeah. Like, he and Mickey love each other.
So. And he actually does say, I love you, kid.
There you go.
Burgess Meredith is mesmerizing as this character.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't do the research. Did he ever get any kind of award recognition, nominated or won for any of these movies?
Not that I know
three
of.
That he was in?
Not that I know of.
No?
It's a shame.
Oh, my God.
Steve, sit down.
To shed a tear in your own death scene and make it work.
See?
Ugh. But yeah. I'm jumping ahead. I'm sorry.
You are. But you're getting me a little choked up, I got to tell you.
Is Matt still there?
Christy, come on.
Matt and Christy are feverishly playing games on their iPads as we talk about this.
Wow. How'd you know?
All right, this will get Christy back into the conversation. Let's talk about Frank Stallone. Let's talk about him for a minute.
I love Frank Stallone.
I know you do. And why do you love Frank Stallone?
That's
because his music makes me want to run. Not away from it, but to it.
I always think of
the Christopher Guest and Martin Short.
Yeah,
that's
that
why.
But you get a quick glimpse of Frank, and he's in this, as he's been in other Rocky movies, and he's got a bigger responsibility here because he's really doing the music for the non-Bill Conti songs, and Rocky is now training for his fight with Clubber, and not taking it very seriously.
Yeah.
This is where we're talking about. They juxtapose it with the Clubber Lang training hard pretty much in squalor. Well, Rocky is just really taking it easy. But I knew Chrissy would appreciate the Frank Stallone.
I appreciate Frank.
He's just listed as one of the opponents in the beginning, too, in the montage.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That was just a domestic squabble they happened to catch on film.
I tried to slow it down to see which one was him, but I couldn't tell. But Chris and I love him from Hudson Hawk. And
yeah.
I love him from Staying Alive.
And you actually talked to him for a while, right? Online or something?
Yes,
That's right.
We had a minor
email
internet relationship, which didn't end well.
but nice.
I probably shouldn't talk about that.
Edit that out.
Now you get into the fight and enter Mr. Apollo Creed.
Oh, yes.
Now, this is our second Carl Weathers podcast, if you want to listen to
it. Did announce Action Jackson's presence every time I saw him on screen.
That's right. You can go back and listen to our Action Jackson if you can't get enough of Carl Weathers. But
or don't.
Don't.
Or don't. Now, this is a big part of the movie for me, and a part that I've always had a problem with as well, as much as I love this movie. I'm going to ask you this. Does Clubber Lang kill Mickey?
Not directly.
I think he pushed him to, like, every time, like, when Rocky's losing, Mick's falling down, holding his heart. As soon as Rocky starts winning, he starts, coming up again.
But what causes his heart attack in that scene? The pre-fight scene, they're coming down the steps. I don't know why they're coming down the steps at the same time in a little skinny.
Yeah, that is a little odd.
But, that's the way it works out. Did he not push Mickey, would Mickey have had a heart attack at that moment?
Yes, when he watched Rocky proceed to lose.
Okay, would Rocky have lost had Mickey not had the heart attack and had that on his mind?
Yes, he would have.
Because he was taking it too lightly.
Well, he lost anyway, but...
But you could say that the pending death of Mickey was on his mind.
Right.
Yeah, but he didn't know he was going to die.
He was old.
It was predestined by everything that came before. I mean, His pronouncement that basically Rocky had become a clown. He was no longer the underdog, was no longer hungry. He didn't want it enough.
Okay. Well, I've often thought that, like, that he pushes him and he kind of, what is he, slam into the steps a little bit.
Yeah.
And he immediately starts to have a heart attack.
Immediately.
I think he's a murderer. I'm going to go with that.
Yeah, that's a pretty harsh accusation, Dave.
I am going to accuse this fictional character of murder.
Tonight on Character Court.
Dun, dun, dun.
But, yeah, the fight is not much of a fight. No Rocky fight has any defense in it whatsoever. Mm. It never once does someone really put their hands up and protect their face. It's all headshots straight to the face in every Rocky movie, but this one is really bad.
These movies, like when I watched all four, like I was saying earlier, these really screwed up my perception of boxing because I was like watching that going, man, I love boxing. Let me turn on some HBO and watch some boxing. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? Is boring.
Matt, you were exactly right because the real boxing looks so fake. Because they're swinging and they're not even doing anything. But Rocky's like, yeah, his head's going back. It's real. You know?
That's the only, I mean, I've sat and touted Stallone's directing a couple of times now. But the lack of defense in any Rocky movie is always kind of comical. Because like now you said, like in real boxing, these are not like real fights.
No.
The closest they come is Rocky Balboa, and maybe it's because they even use the HBO camera angles,
camera crew, and
font and feed and announcers. It seems a little more realistic, but
maybe it's because the best defense is a good offense.
Listen to that,
zinger.
I'm gonna grab a beer, so don't ask me any questions today for like 15 seconds.
Is this like a commercial break? Would you like to endorse the beer? Da, da, da.
Magic
Let's
hat.
Go to the lobby. Let's go to the lobby.
When you're defending the lack of defense, reach for a magic hat.
Grab ourselves some booze.
I better get a crate of magic hat delivered to me now.
Nice.
No, I'm continue talking, Dave. I just don't pose any direct questions to me until I get back.
Okay. Hey, Steve.
So, Steve, what do you think of the end of the fight?
Well, there's the scenes between Apollo and Mr. T are really good, too. I mean, they instantly hate each other for no reason.
Immediately,
Apollo shakes his hand and says, I don't want no has-been missing in my corner.
Yeah. And Apollo looks so badass.
You want to chuck?
Yeah.
Come on, Creed.
Come on, Creed.
That's great. But, yeah, they instantly hate each other. But, yeah, no defense whatsoever. And Rocky gets beaten senseless.
Yeah.
And
so sad to watch.
Goes back to me, what is a very poignant, memorable scene.
There it comes.
And
where he tries to speak Hebrew?
Oh. This is before that.
Oh, no. There we go.
This is the actual death of Mickey. Now, you cannot make fun of this scene. This is the death of Mickey.
This fight.
No, we don't need to tell
it. Can I get my breath? Is that against the rules?
Come on.
We do not need to talk about that. It'll upset Dave.
Tell us.
What are you talking about? Because you know
what?
This scene is.
Man, what happened? Matt, tell us.
Don't do it.
She just like laughs so hard. I didn't even hear the next three lines.
Oh my god.
Oh.
This is one of the most memorable.
She's almost laughing as hard. She has got her mouth on her hand on her mouth. He is red as a freaking cherry, trying not to laugh.
Guys, I just got back.
She's gonna hyperventilate.
This is one of the most.
So hard not to laugh.
This is one of the most memorable death scenes in all of movies.
Movie history, yeah.
It's like I can't remember.
What'd you say?
She sounds like Rocky.
Now, see, listen. Not so nice when it's directed at you, is it?
This is so good because he has his little, you know, Rocky and Mickey have their conversation and he dies, and
then it just
and Rocky just loses it,
yeah,
and it's so great. I don't know how anyone could possibly laugh at that scene.
And may I say also that this is one of my prime arguments when people inevitably do the Stallone Schwarzenegger comparison.
Mm-hmm.
You show me a movie where Arnold ever attempted this kind of thing. Like, yes, Sly as Rambo later on was basically doing what Arnold does in every movie.
Mm.
But, I mean, and you might laugh if I talk about Sly's range, but, like, this is an example of it. Arnold never has this range in anything.
He does now.
Well, he ranges from one woman to the next.
He's free range.
I totally agree with Steve, because I have always thought he's been maligned as a director, writer, and actor. And this scene, I think, is fantastic.
It's almost, like, so real. Like, just, it's him crying.
We still got more to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, nobody looks very dignified in real life when these things happen.
You gotta join the circus and come up with a dual clown act, little old clown and big, both beefy clown.
Sorry.
Is that what he said? I must have missed that part.
That's not what he said. Now, I've seen this 50 times. I watched it the other day, and I still get a chill.
Yeah, it's really... It's moving to us, Dave.
And you know, I was watching it with my son. He's 9 years old, and he looks at the scene and he goes, "I bet Chris would be crying if he were here."
Did it really?
He did. That's exactly what he said. But what a poignant scene and well acted.
See, it reduces everyone to tears, even people who don't want to be.
That's
I'm
right.
I'm certainly crying right now.
It is so fantastic.
It is. It's
well,
fucking great.
So he then goes on a little jaunt around the scenic Philadelphia, and how about when he throws the helmet at the statue?
I always thought part of the statue
is,
broke off.
I think it's the face.
So
yeah, it's
safe
a helmet.
To drive away without a helmet on.
Yes, it's the face mask on the helmet, I think.
Did you not learn from Gary Busey?
Ooh.
Well, another guy you can't understand.
No, but that's because his sentences don't make sense. Oh. I will tear your endocrine system.
What? Well, that scene's great too when he's driving around. And then you also mentioned Mickey's funeral. And there's no one at Mickey's funeral.
I was thinking that, yeah.
I looked it up too, and they said that this is where he really learned, too, that Mickey's Jewish, and you never really even know his last name until now. There's a thing in as far as Jewish ceremonies go, it's called minyan, which means you have to have 10 men at a funeral, or the prayers that are said aren't valid. There's only 4 people there, and they're not all men.
He owned a fucking gym.
Yeah, there's nobody
Where's
there.
Where's everybody at?
Yeah, it's kind of that's a little sloppy, I think.
Yeah.
You could have got Spider Rico and some of those other guys there, and filled it out, but yeah, this is where you learn Mickey's background. Because I don't think before this you ever knew his name even. But then you get to see Mighty Mix, which is where a lot of the action of the first two take place, and you get the rest of the movie pretty much. Yeah. Apollo and Rocky are going to work together.
They're now friends.
Yeah, and that was one of my main questions for Christy. In watching this and not having as big a background in Rocky, did you assume that they were friends?
Yeah, but only because I kind of knew about the adversarial relationship before.
Mm-hmm. To me, they have some candid moments in the first two, and I think there's a mutual respect, even if Apollo doesn't portray that in the media. But to me, they're never really friends.
Never really. I think Apollo like grows finally for him at the end too. Like respects him. But when did they finally have dinner and have a beer? Like when did they finally?
Yeah.
Hook up.
I'm missing that and I love.
In the ocean, I believe, right? They surf with their half shirts.
I'm telling you one thing, man.
Maybe in the alley with the hotel guy from Action Jackson.
If no one mentions their junk moving side to side running down the beach, I fucking will.
When they're running?
Oh my god, what do you mean? Don't act stupid. You saw their cocks moving.
I was staring at the fact that Carl Weathers has his mouth closed while he's running, but Sly Stallone is like
oh my god.
He looks like a dog on the back porch or in the back seat when it hits on the freeway.
Oh shit.
Well, we'll get to that later, but this relationship between them is pretty much just fabricated out of nowhere because they never were really as close as they suddenly become after Mickey dies. Because my other question then was, why doesn't Apollo fight him?
Not in the script.
And I wondered if Apollo had retired after Rocky II. I mean, he fights the charity fight against Drago in Rocky IV, where he, spoiler, will die.
What?
Oh, man.
But, you know, like...
Thank God. That means I don't have to watch it.
And I looked it up, and they did... Somebody did a little bit of research, and they said, based on things he says in Rocky IV, he is still active and fighting people. You just never see it. Why doesn't Apollo, as the really former heavyweight champion of the world, not take a shot at Clubber Lang?
He knows Mr. T would kill him.
I have a theory about that.
Okay.
I think that Apollo knows that his number one strength is in promotion, rather than in you know, actual, like, God-given skill. And he senses that there is an excellent opportunity to, how does he put it, like a record-breaking gate or something like that?
Yeah. He said he's you know, I'm not opposed to making money or something like that.
Yeah. You know, like, he talks a good fight, but I mean, that's a big part of what his character is. He's a showman.
He's like early, what that guy's name? Don King?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could say that. He's the boxer and Don King rolled into one.
So you think he's doing this more for selfish or monetary reasons than doing it for Rocky?
For the money.
No, I just mean that he probably didn't think that he'd be able to take Clubber Lang himself. A combination of those two things.
And I always wondered why. Because it's not like he's over the hill. You might be right, Steve, and that is a good reason for all this. But it just kind of, maybe because we're such big fans, the fact that they were suddenly bosom buddies, I mean, you know.
Who is it?
That always kind of bothered me because their relationship was not like that. And I was curious what Christy had thought, because if you were to just watch this movie and really not watch the others, you'd be like, oh, these guys are really good friends. Yeah. But to me, they're not.
No.
So the promotion thing and the money thing, I'm sure, has more to do with it than I ever really let on. Because, like I said, this is the first Rocky movie I ever saw. And seeing it, I was just like, oh, these guys, you know, they're real close.
So, I guess they are.
As we'll see on the beach.
Yes, that's right.
We are the richer for it.
Well, and more good acting, I think, for the rest of the movie from Stallone. You know, whether everyone agrees or not is besides the point. But if you watch Rocky and Rocky II, like we said, he's very animated and funny. Like, really funny.
Yeah.
And for this movie, he has almost no personality.
No.
He's depressed. He's quiet.
He's sad.
He's unsure of himself. It's very unlike Rocky and the other ones, and I chalk it up to good acting.
Father figure died. He's all upset.
That's right. That's one of the things that I was thought was interesting too. Like, you know, Apollo's always yelling at him. You know, what's the matter with you?
Yeah, he's always yelling at him.
He says that a dozen times. And you know, there is no tomorrow, that whole scene. Rocky's in mourning.
Yeah.
And he doesn't quite understand why he's depressed. Like, his dad just died for all intents and purposes.
He don't care, he wants the money.
Maybe Steve's right.
I like those words.
I like the maybe in the front.
Maybe.
But no, Dave, that's a very good point. It does lend evidence to this theory that there's, you know, Sly had an arc in mind all along.
Okay.
He is so radically charismatic in the first movie in Rocky. You know, he's a motor mouth. Mm. He's got advice to dispense for other people. He's, you know, he's to a point cocky, but you eventually come to love the fact that he's always got something to say.
Yeah.
Which is actually something that endears Mickey to us as well, I think.
Yeah.
You know, however cantankerous he may be.
Yeah.
But then the fact that Rocky becomes more dour and stoic as the movies go on, culminating with, you know, Rocky Balboa, where it's just like relentlessly mournful.
Yeah.
It's moving if you look at the whole, you know, the whole arc of it.
And I think when people think about Stallone and his acting and people that like to pigeonhole him as the Rambo type guy, he is more Rambo like in this. And I think this is what people, when people think of his acting and his style, this is what they go to. Where to me, he's playing a man who's at a crossroads in his life. So I know I've always felt that he's been unfairly, you know, put in a stereotype of a grunter.
I think he did it to himself with the later Rambo movies.
And I think that Christy is doing it right now.
I'm not doing anything to him right now.
Mm-hmm. You're thinking bad things about Sylvester Stallone.
One of the greatest.
No. No, I'm not.
Well, can I make another observation?
Yes.
Okay, and I've been thinking about this. I have a feeling that, Christy, you're coming at this sort of backwards, you know, retroactively, where you've been steeped in, we've all been steeped in over 20 years of Stallone satire, you know, where all of these conventions, Rambo and Rocky and stuff, have just like been skewered relentlessly. I mean, you mentioned the Team America reference, and you said there was another thing in there somewhere. Well, it just makes me think of this, which is essentially a spoof. But coming at it from the front, where we're seeing this in order without the benefit of all this kind of post-ironic commentary, it really does it works on you.
Well, that is your perspective.
All right, it works on me.
My perspective is to take it from behind and
whoa, what was that? Hello.
It's not.
What?
It's what was not, that?
I did that just for you, Chris.
Jump on that, Chris.
Whoa, what was that? Jump on that from behind.
Jeez.
So
I have that perspective.
I'm so glad Steve's here.
Steve, you're
however, I still did not care for the movie.
Unreal.
But you liked Rocky Balboa, you said, right?
I appreciated it.
No, you said liked. You didn't say loved.
Go back.
Hell no, I didn't say loved. But play I did. I liked the wrestler.
Huh.
Well, Rocky Balboa is really a product of its time, you know, and Stallone's gradually and the directors have gradually changed the tone depending on the time and sort of what was required. So I can see why you would like that one. I think you would like the first one and the sixth one.
I think I am done watching Rocky for quite a while.
That's all right. You can come back. Rocky never forgets.
He'll be there just like a fungus.
Well, Christy, you're going to have your own revenge because you're picking our next movie.
And I thought it was Chris.
No, it is Chris.
I think he's after me.
I was thinking you would be picking Rocky IV, but
I would watch that.
Well, Rocky IV is pretty hard to defend in many respects, I admit.
That's more of a guilty
Rocky
pleasure.
IV. It's got a Russian guy and he beats his face in. It's perfect.
Spoilers, people. Spoilers.
It's like almost a direct quote from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, I think.
Yeah.
I'm trying to quote that. Yeah.
Is that another post-ironic spoof?
Well, there's the scene. I mean, he's running on the beach and it's not working. He won't even finish running on the beach. No. He's having flashbacks of Clubber Lang beating him up
with his bloody teeth.
It's just you know, and he even says when they're about to run, he says, Mickey never had me do this. He's still thinking about Mickey.
Yeah, he's so upset. He's torn.
Adrian's speech though comes next, and this becomes really a staple of every Rocky movie after this. I mean, she never did this before, and she does it every time now.
And it's so good though. You're waiting for the whole movie just. Push him in the right direction, Adrian. Just tell him what to do.
It's like a little pep talk, and it's very unlike her character. And I actually do not like the Adrian speech/scene in any Rocky movie. And if I were to be watching it, this would be a skipper for me. I would skip this scene because I always find it a little bit annoying. I always find her a little bit annoying in general. She's always the first person to stand up and yell, "Stop the fight!"
Yeah.
Well, what do you expect to happen? He's a boxer. He's going to get hit in the face.
No one hears her.
Yeah. But after that, you get really what I would consider the highlight of any Rocky movie, and that is the training montage.
Now, second training montage.
Second training montage. Thank you, Steve. This is the serious training montage. Now, Rocky's back on track because Adrian's kicked his ass.
Yep.
And... now you get some.
They really should have used Phil Collins' "I Can't Dance" for this montage.
Well, you got a lot of shirtless, sweaty muscles glazing in the hot, sweaty gym.
Fantastic.
Ooh.
Ooh, boy.
Now,
another scene that has uncomfortable racial overtones in it.
And what would that be?
Well, they walk in and everyone stops what they're doing, and it's all black dudes.
Yep.
Looking really menacing, and here's this group. totally feeling out of place. And I think, and Pauly makes a couple of almost, no pun intended, off-color references.
Yeah, Pauly's a racist.
He is a racist, but you know what? He's a blue-collar Philly guy.
Yeah.
It's totally realistic.
He's keeping it real.
Yeah.
And why is Adrian there for all this anyway? She is, like, always in tow. So what are you saying you're seeing swinging as they're running?
When they're running down the beach and they short shorts, with Daisy Duke short shorts.
Yeah.
And when the right leg is up forward,
yeah,
the balls and cock go to the left. Then when the left leg pushes the balls and cock back over, it goes to the right. So obvious.
Really?
Great. I'm really glad this follows what I just said about race relations.
Yeah, exactly. Anyone's particularly more noticeable than the others, Chris? You want to go that far?
No.
Good.
Apollo Creed almost tripped Rocky.
Now with legs. Come on, you gotta be fucking Stevie Wonder if you can't see that shit, man. It's so obvious.
Creed lost his leg in a war.
It's so obvious, left and right. There it goes.
I gotta say, I never noticed.
Yeah. Let's watch it.
I never did. I'm looking at their faces. What a fool.
Well, the camera's on there. Never mind.
Well, the thing that always bothered me about this race was, you know, they're cutting to this race over and over again. There's no possible way that Sylvester Stallone could beat Carl Weathers in a race.
He's so short.
Carl Weathers is a world-class athlete. He played in the NFL. Yeah. And there's
you can even see Carl Weathers, like, back in, like, slowing down. Seriously. And then Rocky passes him.
Yeah, that scene always kind of bothered me. There's no possible way. But that is followed by a frolic in the ocean.
That's what we do, Dave, right?
What is going
on
there?
On the shore playing the Jaws theme. We had this discussion.
What is going on?
They're both happy.
Okay.
They're both wet in the water.
With their cut-off shirts.
Cut-off shirts and their cut-off shorts.
Because they couldn't afford full shirts.
Did you see that, Jim?
Yeah.
That scene is very uncomfortable.
For you.
A lot of hugging, and they're just standing clapping.
Clapping, yeah.
Hey, we should get a Polaroid of this.
What was that? Was someone drowning?
No, she's...
Stallone's face as he's running. It's like...
Christy.
Carl Weathers tight as a drum.
I expected a little more out of you.
I'm so angry, but that's just funny. How she does
you
that.
You know the next time you watch the movie, you're going to freak out.
I'm going to be
seat.
Thinking that, yeah.
You cannot ruin this for me.
Oh, I will try.
Stay strong, Steve.
Stay strong.
Stay strong.
All right, well, you know, now you get to the rematch, and we're pulling into the home stretch here. I know Christy's upset, but the rematch at Madison Square Garden, and Clubber is he's a little more cordial to the press now than he was before. He's not smashing cameras anymore, but he gives one of his most famous lines in the pre-fight prediction. And what is the prediction, Chris?
Pain. I think I'll play it for a second.
Would you like me to?
Please.
Prediction? Pain.
You did that pretty well.
Come on, Creed.
But, you know, they keep talking about this favor that Rocky is going to need.
What favor?
He's going to owe Apollo. Not the millions of dollars they're going to make off the fight, but
I still
a favor.
Don't know, like, what, just to see who would win?
Well, I don't know. We can talk about that.
I thought he wanted that painting made of them.
The Leroy Neiman painting.
I love that painting though.
You would put that painting up over your bed if you had it.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. Leroy Neiman's actually in the movie though, the painter. He's the he's the ring announcer at the Thunder Lips.
So was Rocky's first wife, like in real life.
Yeah, so she's the one that comes up and kisses him and goes, I need to get out of here.
Yeah. Never knew that.
And Frank, I mean, it's a family affair. You got a problem with that?
No, sir.
Okay.
Cheap labor.
Yeah. But he wants to give, Apollo wants to give Rocky his trunks, his red, white, and blue trunks. Are you wear your colors?
Are they washed?
You just make sure
yes.
You wash them.
I asked the same question.
Yeah. Well, this is what Rocky will wear in the next film as well.
Fantastic.
In honor of his fallen friend. You okay, Chris?
Yeah.
You gonna make it?
No.
Throw in the towel!
Oh my God, stop it.
Throw in the damn towel!
Matt, stop it.
If he dies, he dies.
Oh my God.
People, focus.
That's the wrong movie.
Oh, shit, that's right.
He dies.
I pitied the fool.
Well, you know, and there's another cool Apollo versus Clubber scene, you know, at the beginning. I could use a few more scenes between them. That would have been good. I'd like to see Apollo versus Clubber. I guess that's my main thing.
And you can when you play the old Nintendo game.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You have those games. They're pretty good.
Actually, you can fight as the Rocky statue.
No.
Yeah. Hmm. And one punch and you're down.
That's if you put in up, up, down, down, left, right, B, A. Select start.
I forget, but okay.
Is that about right?
About right.
Now, what system was this for?
I think the GameCube I have it for.
Well, we should get that out after we're done.
You can. You play all the characters. You even can play as Mickey.
No.
Real young, I mean, real old and skinny, yeah. Seriously.
Yeah, we're definitely playing this game. Well, fight number two, you know, Clubber doesn't even touch him in round one. In fact, Clubber gets knocked out and is never cut. I mean, this is, once again, some not great directing as far as a boxing match. But Rocky in this now is becoming Rocky again. And I know that Chris and I sit and watch this scene where he's challenging Clubber to hit him in the face.
Yeah. You ain't so bad.
My mother hits harder than that.
And then he plays with Mr. T's mohawk.
He does. He puts his glove on the mohawk. That is so great.
Movie history.
Now, who did not have chills during any of those scenes?
Christy.
Ding, 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 ding. Ding, ding.
What about you, Matt?
Oh, I love that scene. Yeah. The only thing that I found distracting this time that I never noticed before was the overdubbing of the two fighters talking.
Oh, okay.
You know, because it's like they certainly, yeah, are not, their mouths aren't moving and you hear them talking smack back and forth. Never noticed that before, though.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say it ruins the scene at all. Just no. I noticed it this time. That's really all I have to say.
Plus, the scene ruins the scene.
Even now I'm pissed at you.
Yes, get her, Matt. Punch her in the face.
Her from behind. She said earlier.
Well, another thing that I think is funny is that he spent that whole time with Apollo learning how to fight more like Apollo, be light on his feet, and more like Muhammad Ali-like. And once the fight starts, he pretty much abandons everything Apollo ever taught him. And he just goes back to the way he used to fight. He just lets the guy hit him and hit him and hit him, and then he just kind of takes over.
Right in the ribs.
Are you sure? He seems really fast. Maybe that swimming paid off.
Yeah.
Well, all that swimming and bouncing the ball and stuff.
That's right. I love it. I love the scene. I love the music, the Bill Conti music, which was used in not every Rocky movie. And the ones where they're not used, I think it suffers. Rocky IV, he went to a more 80s digital synthesized score, which is okay in its own way. But the Bill Conti music is really like another character in the movie. It's awesome music. It's very 70s, but great music.
Fantastic.
So, Chris, is there anything that you don't like about this movie?
In one word?
Yes.
No. It's like an 80s, it's Rocky. It's like it's what I grew up with, you know? It's Rocky.
It's Rocky. That's all you have to say. That's what you said about Indiana Jones.
It's Indiana Jones, man.
It's Indiana Jones. Well, you get then your epilogue and... Matt's favorite line from the movie when they're
there comes
repaying the favor, and this really cements their friendship. Now I actually believe that they're very good friends because
they're fighting.
Well, they've been through a lot together at this point, but you get you know, they're going to repay the favor now, and he finds out what repaying the favor is that Apollo wants like a little sparring match to see if he really is better than him. And makes me ask the question again why he just didn't fight for himself the whole time. But it's a good way to end the movie, I think. And it has Matt's favorite line.
And they've even parodied it in Family Guy.
What, the ding ding?
Yeah, they did the whole thing. It was Cleveland and him at the end of a show, and Cleveland does the ding ding, and they both take a swing, and it stops, and it turns into the painting at the end.
We got to find that and post it.
Yes.
to be fair, Family Guy rarely parodies things; they just reference.
Yeah, that's true. Good point. Yeah, they rebooted it.
That is a
thank you for that clarification.
That is
no,
a
he's right, though.
Shot across
my biggest
the
problem
bow.
With Seth MacFarlane is that he only writes like 10% of an episode.
Well, it finishes with the Leroy Neiman painting and Eye of the Tiger again, which I actually hate that song. I mean, I don't know how you feel about
it. I think I heard it so long, so often.
That's
now.
A lousy song.
Doesn't age well.
No. Every time I hear it, I think of the kid on the Cosby Show that sang it. Do you remember the little kid?
Bud?
No, it was like Rudy had a sleepover and the one kid just starts singing, his little white kid.
No.
It was pretty funny. I'll put that on our Facebook page, too. That's all I think of when I hear Eye of the Tiger.
Oh, it's. I'm sorry, it's Cleveland and Quagmire. I think this is the one where Cleveland or Quagmire slept with Cleveland's wife, if you want to track it down. That was the worst impression I've ever heard of Quagmire. And Chris usually had the best impressions I hear of anybody.
That's what I could do. Giddy-giggity.
Giddy-up giggity.
Giggity-giggity here.
I've never seen Family Guy, so I have no idea what you're even talking about. But I guess that's all about Rocky III as far as the movie goes. But now it's time to hear how we feel. I think that Chris's and mine will come of no surprise. So I'm most interested in hearing Matt and Steve's, actually. But we'll go in the order we usually do, and we'll get Christy out of the way first. So, Christy, what is your review of Rocky III? Now, we're going to do this in our original viewing versus our latest viewing. Now, is it two separate ones for you, or are you just going to do one review?
I saw it 2 days ago, mm-hmm. My review has not really changed from 2 days ago.
Oh, boy.
While I appreciate that...
You gotta
the kid in you.
You gotta see Dave sitting here just smirking and smiling, waiting for your review.
While I appreciate that those of the testosterone persuasion find a deep clarity with this movie, I did not care for it.
Mm-hmm. Shocking.
So, I mean, that's it.
So, out of five, how many are you giving this?
Two.
Well, that's not too bad.
That's actually not bad.
Because you know why?
Why?
Muppets.
And glistening muscles?
Hell yes.
Okay.
And Hulk Hogan shirtless.
Well, one for each peck.
Christy, I think that you actually deserve a lot of credit for this, because I know that this is not something you would ever watch, and I appreciate you watching it. And not being as mean to Rocky in your grading as Chris was to some of the movies that he has hated in the past.
Tron sucked.
Not even giving it a whole number.
Uh-huh.
Nope, a coin.
So, Christy, I appreciate your candor and your delicate touch with this.
You're welcome. It is out of my deep sense of respect for you that I did not wail on it. Had this been Chris's pick, it would have had the proverbial stick up its proverbial ass.
Ooh. Well, we'll be maybe doing that next week. This Chris is picking next. But I'm going to move it along to Matt. And I think I'm most interested to hear Matt's take on this.
Okay. Well, when I first saw it, I loved it. I'd say I probably would have rated it about a 4. Maybe, I'll say 4. Now, the story certainly absolutely holds up. I still love the story. I had a harder time watching this because it's one of those films, and we get this now and again, and this is not really anything to do with the acting or the story, unfortunately. The age of the film was hard for me to watch, so I'm not sure I'll be watching it that much more throughout my life. So I dropped it to like a 3.5, only because it's just like the age of it is getting harder and harder to watch. So that might be the first time I dropped it for kind of almost like a technical merit.
I understand what you mean. It is, even though it's an 80s movie, it has a 70s feel to it. And yeah, I know exactly what it suffers from.
But wait, the original Rocky ages okay?
I haven't seen that since the first time I saw it, so I can't answer that. I would probably say it suffers from the same problem for me.
But you're not dropping it very much, so you would say it holds up for you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it was too heavy. Like you said, the 70s feel and the 80s feel was too heavy on, well, what movie set in its time isn't really heavy on its culture at the time. So that's probably not fair. But that's my feeling. I just had a harder time watching it this time than the first time. So I had to drop it a little bit. Not to say I don't like it. I really enjoyed watching it.
Well, it's nice to hear that someone in your household
is smart.
You're just asking for it for next week.
I'm picking critters.
All right. Well, let's hear what Steve has to say. Steve, as the founder and president of the Stallone Club for Men,
that's right.
Your comments hold a lot of weight. So let's hear what they are.
Okay. Well, let me try and keep it succinct. It's a scale of 1 to 5, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. If the original Rocky is an absolute 5, and then Rocky 2 dips for me because if it's maudlin, she's in a coma quality, that dips down to like a 2.9.
Ooh.
I think that Rocky 3 brings it back up, 4.1. Mm. And I think that the following factors do it. Stallone's sensitivity, Mickey's incredible, the tour de force that Burgess Meredith brings to it. Clubber Lang's charisma, even as the villain. And I think it's a natural progression of the character. He has to become the underdog again through some kind of sacrifice. And he does.
Beautifully put, Steve.
Thank you.
Verbatim what I was going to say.
And now you're going to be followed with Chris.
Cock and balls.
It's Rocky. Perfect. And it's Rocky again. It's perfect. Next.
If you know me, the 80s was it for me. All the movies out there was fucking fantastic. Rocky's right up there with the 80s childhood memories. I give it a 5, 82. I'm with Matt. The only thing, like the age of it, you can see how it aged. And I ain't dropping it far, but I'm giving it a 4.5 in 2011. Doesn't drop at all much, but it's still just the age of it.
That's the same amount I dropped it.
Yeah, it's just, you can tell, but it's you know what? It's fucking Rocky. There you go.
There you go. That's all you need to say.
That's it.
No, you were consistent with Matt. Matt did. That was,
yeah,
that
yeah. Was good. Matt's right.
Well, this was my pick, my panelist pick, and like I said, it was a pleasure for me to watch this again. My original viewing, the second movie I ever taped, right after Empire Strikes Back, when we first got our VCR, 5 out of 5 back in the day. I worshipped Stallone. I had posters of him on my walls. I wanted to look like him. I mean, what kid didn't? And there weren't that many sports movies, and I'm a huge sports fan, so I hadn't been exposed to too many sports movies. Not that the Rocky movies are necessarily sports movies, but more about a character who is an athlete. But I'm watching this the other day and sticking by what I think is the best Rocky movie. I love this movie. I know the first one is more of a film that was critically acclaimed and Oscar nominated on several, and Oscar winner on several occasions. But if I'm going to pick a Rocky movie to sit down and watch and have a good time, there's no way in hell I'm watching the original Rocky. It's a great movie. It's a great film. But I'm not picking that to sit down and have a good time and watch. I like Rocky II a little bit better than the original. And this, to me, is my favorite one. It's so much fun to watch. It has everything that a Rocky movie should have. The recap of the prior one, a loss, the training, redemption, and victory. Mickey's death. It has the best opponent. I think it's Stallone's best acting in the entire series because of all what we said about it. He's not playing the same kind of character that he played in the other ones. It's the least like Rocky's character. If I had to order these movies, I think this is Rocky at its apex, and I'm putting it as number one. I'm putting it as the best Rocky movie. I know that a lot of people would not agree with that because the original Rocky is so renowned. But to me, I'd rather watch this. I was going to say.
What the hell?
Excuse me.
Well said, Dave.
All right, so I guess for the dudes, at least, Rocky III holds up, so... And for Christy, it was never really stood a chance in hell. But But
no.
No.
But I still, like I said, appreciate her.
What if Sean Connery was Rocky Balboa?
No.
So it's not so much just...
I just wish I would have videotaped. If I knew it was coming, I would have videotaped her reaction to Mickey's death scene because I was not expecting it.
I wasn't expecting it either. I wasn't expecting it either. It just kind of happened.
What if Rocky was played by Kermit the Frog?
You can't even ask me that.
Oh well. Do you have any? Do you feel any differently about Stallone now, Christy, than you did yesterday?
No.
Well, that's actually probably not too bad because at least you don't feel worse.
Or true.
Can you not feel worse?
You liked the Expendables.
I did like the Expendables.
All right.
And the Expendables, can I just say, is absolutely drenched in, again, in that like self-aware thing where it's really aping the kind of movies that previously were played straight. We're in a totally post-ironic commenting culture. It's winking at itself the whole time, so perhaps that's why it spoke to you.
I am all about the wise ass, yes.
You hear Steve?
I did. Steve.
This is like the only place you can get content like this.
He's a genius.
From the president himself of the Stallone Club for Men.
Well, I'm also a client.
Very good. All right, so we'll have that as the last word on Rocky III. So, I mean, go see it. What the hell?
I do have one thing after that. After this, you owe me a favor, Dave.
What is that?
Does that mean we have to do beaches next time?
Oh, no.
It's an awesome... I don't know if it's a karaoke track or what. If I found, I'll post it on the webpage when we get to that point.
This
Indian guy singing Eye of the Tiger.
Oh, boy.
Dude, there's going to be a lot of smack posted about this Rocky podcast.
Yes. I look forward to it.
I do, too. All right, well, it's time now for our top five segment. And in honor of the life of Mickey Goldmill, we are going to be doing
He's Jewish?
Yes.
Never knew that.
We covered this, Steve.
Oh, yes, we did. That's right.
We are going to be doing our top five movie deaths. Now, this could be pretty much anything, something that you found memorable for whatever reason. Maybe it was sad. Maybe it was funny. Maybe it was whatever. We are going to go through the panelists, and we usually take turns and go through our list. But since there's five of us, and we're going to make this a little quicker, we're going to run right through our list. So, Christy, if you would, and your list is at hand, tell us your top five from 5 to 1 most memorable movie deaths.
Number 5 for me would be the adulterator, Arnold Schwarzenegger, in Terminator 2. Mm. Only because I had to watch it every single day at work, where he dies for, and then John and I were alone. And I actually do quite enjoy Terminator 2.
Awesome.
My number 4 would be Mustafa from Lion King.
Mufasa.
I bawled.
Mufasa, you mean?
Mufasa, yeah.
That's how much it affected her.
I like when Roger. I like when Roger died in Lion King.
My number 4 is Mike Staffa from Lion King.
Good old Mike.
Mufasa.
He suffered the wrath for Scar.
Yes. Yeah. Scab.
Very good.
So Lion King, I bawled for what's his name. Number 3 for me would be Groundhog Day, and Bill Murray dying over and over and over again.
That's
good. That's a
good one. Think about that one.
Good.
Number 2 would be the inconceivable death of Fezzik in Princess Bride.
Nice.
No, dog death with a Sicilian.
Isn't that Vizzini?
Oh, shit. Yes, it is. Sorry. This is what happens when I try to, like, hurry through a list and just go, I don't know.
Yeah. I was just talking about that death earlier today with my wife because she's a huge fan, and I was like, I knew that would be on her list when they're talking about the poison and switching the cups. That is really funny. He's great.
The best is the fact that he just goes, ha, ha, ha. There's something about verbal deaths that just make me laugh.
And Mickey Goldmill.
And my last would be another verbal death. Paul Reubens in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I would have that
one. Yeah.
Eddie Murphy's impression of Mr. T having sex.
Hey, boy.
That was a great list.
You
had a little bit of everything on there. A little sad, a little funny.
Yes. I have no Terms of Endearment or Steel Magnolias. Primarily because I've never seen either of those movies.
That's a good reason. All right. Matt, how about you? What's your 5-to-1 memorable movie deaths?
Okay. First, let me say this list was hard because I kept thinking, I was like, well, are they memorable because, you know, they affected me, or is it because they're my favorite characters? They made me laugh, and in the end, I just went, fuck it. I've done this before, so I said, fuck it. Here's the first 5 that came to mind for whatever reason. I don't know what, when I even started thinking about this. So instead of overthinking it, I just, like I said, just jotted down the 5 that popped into my head. And oddly enough, number 5 is Pee Wee Herman and Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Hey!
That's so cute.
Isn't it? Number 4 is Samuel L. Jackson in Deep Blue Sea.
Oh, my God. I totally forgot about that one.
That one was awesome.
Yes.
Number 3, and I don't know the character's name, but it's the dude in the gold mask in Flash Gordon.
I don't know that one.
It's been a while.
It's on that big tilting thing that Flash Gordon and James Bond were fighting on, where the spikes come out, and then eventually they throw the gold guy with the gold mask on, and his tongue and eyes pop out of his mask, and I always remember that
because it freaked you out when you were little.
Yeah, because I was like,
I think
really
I remember
young
that a little bit now.
Something you had nightmares over or something?
No, not nightmares, but it did freak me out when I first saw it.
Freaked your crap out.
And number 2, actually, I adjusted number 2 because I was going to put a. Khan from Wrath of Khan, but I was like, I think Wrath of Khan has been on every one of my lists, so let me change it up and actually pick my second most memorable Star Trek death, which you guys probably don't know the character at all, but his name is Chancellor Gorkon from Star Trek VI, and I remember it because he was killed in a zero gravity scene, so there's like the blood bursts were zero gravity. It was pretty interesting scene for a Star Trek. You know, they're usually not that bloody, so that kind of that's why that made replace Khan for me. And number 1, and this is not to get Chris excited in any means, it was the first one that popped into my head, and it's Hans Gruber falling from the top of that building in Die Hard.
That's awesome. That's fucking awesome.
That is great. That was a great list. What was your number 4 again?
Samuel L. Jackson in Deep Blue Sea,
okay,
where he's giving a speech about how they're going to get out of there, and then the shark pops up out of the water and chomps them in half.
That's great.
Yeah, that was surprising.
Yeah. Because he was like the star, I guess, and then all of a sudden he's dead.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, well, guess he ain't getting out of there.
Exactly, yeah.
It's another inversion of horror tropes, you know, where traditionally the person who gives the pep talk speech is going to live, mm-hmm. and so it deliberately plays with your expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Well done. That was a good list. Yeah, Hans Gruber. I had Hans Gruber on my short list too. I knew, but that's a great list.
Thank you,
Steve. What do you have?
Way
there?
Better than Christie's list.
Okay.
So far, both lists excellent.
I'm proud to say that none of mine are duplicates.
Okay.
Okay. Let me start. Let's see. All right. I'm counting down to best, right, in my opinion.
Yes.
All right. Number 5, I got to go with that. I don't know if he's named, but that one pilot in Air Force One who throws his jet in the way of the missile. Okay. Only nice. Not because I think Air Force One is a great movie. I don't. But from a very young age, I remember learning that Secret Service people had to throw themselves in the way of bullets, and I just could never understand that. It's a job. Why would you do that kind of thing?
Yeah.
And that Air Force One scene is doing that on a grand scale? All right, so I got that guy.
Wow.
That was a good one.
Unnamed lamented pilot, Air Force One.
Mike Steffa.
Talk about a best boy. Okay. After that, I would have to go with the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. Those Nazis getting melted. But in particular, Tote.
Wow, yes. Yep.
With his melting face.
David hit me on that one.
Which was an effect. Again, I saw that as a... Well, I saw that at a really young age. And that effect always stuck with me. Like, there is the wrath of God in your face.
Okay. No face!
Yeah, that was just, like, mind-blowing when you're a little kid. Even though it's...
Just melting away, man.
It's not anatomically correct. I mean...
From there, I would have to say... And we're spoiling. We're major spoiling. Did we warn anyone about that?
No.
About all the things? No. Okay. All right. On we go. Cool Hand Luke.
Oh.
The death of Cool Hand Luke because of the way that it affects George Kennedy's character, whose name is escaping me at this time.
Love that movie.
He lets out that primal wail, and he decks the one cop. I mean, well, he really, like, mauls him, essentially. That affects me so much. So what is that, three?
That was three.
Okay. Number two, perhaps again because I was very in a formative age, Artex the horse,
ooh,
who cannot be pulled out of that swamp no matter what, and goes down. That horse with his bulging eyes and Atreyu pleading with him desperately to live.
But he came back, didn't he?
That doesn't matter.
Oh, okay.
My number one pick came back too, but that doesn't make it any less
affecting.
Number one. Okay, and I did consider Adam Goldberg in Saving Private Ryan, his death, but that was overshadowed by... Wait, Matt, did you say Star Trek 2 was off-limits?
No, just for my list, because it's always on my list. So
right?
Just for me, yeah.
Ah, but the death of Spock. And then he dies, and they ship him off into space in that giant sunglasses case. Hell of a thing when Spock died. Hell of a thing.
That's a great list.
That was an awesome list.
Yeah, the Spock thing, that has been on some lists, and it was even on my list last week. I'm not a Star Trek fan, but I remember being little and understanding the sacrifice that he made for those people, although they be fictional characters. It was still, it stood out to me, and it made an impression on me, too.
Well, of all the souls I've encountered in all my travels, his was the most... human.
That was good, Steve. All right, Chris, let's hear your list. I predicted Chris's list, and
mine is...
I predict pain.
If you know me, you can guess four out of top five. Number five is, we just talked about the move a movie, Rocky IV, Apollo Creed's death, because I'm saying this right now. When Dave moved away, I was so upset. I used to play No Easy Way Out by myself in the car, driving on Park Avenue, heartbroken.
That's nice, but creepy.
A little bit.
I'm not sure. I have very mixed feelings on that.
Even though my best friend didn't die, but he moved away.
I wasn't dead. I hadn't been bludgeoned by a steroid-popping Russian.
I don't know what Amy's background was. Number four is it's fresh on my mind, mostly because of the TV show, but in the movie was even sad too, when Pa Kent has that heart attack in the driveway, and with all my powers, I couldn't save him.
It's very sad.
That's a little bit, and then Smallville, I mean, that's whoa.
That's whoa.
I think I cried more in Smallville than I did during the movie. Number four is that one. Number three is a scene where, you know, you're watching the first three movies, and then this happens at the end before the prequels came out, is when Darth Vader asks Luke, "Take off my mask."
Got it, on my list.
With my own eyes.
You're keeping score over there, Christy, for Chris's list?
That's just
sad. I did. I kind of wrote up a little, I think Chris is going to vote for this list.
I think it's just sad. He finally sees his son, and it's a fat guy. It doesn't even look like Hayden Christensen, but, you know, it was just sad. He looks at his son and then dies.
That can be fixed. He can look like Hayden Christensen later.
Yeah, good point, yeah. Good point, Steve. Now, My number two one, I totally forgot until Dave guessed my top five list, and he put this name three fucking times on the list. Because I was an emotional wreck when Harry Stamper is up in space about to blow up that goddamn meteorite. And there's Liv Tyler downstairs with her hand on the TV screen. That's my father up there.
Oh, my God.
I don't want to close my eyes.
I was crying for... What? This came out in 99, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
So I can't blame the fact that I had a daughter yet.
No, you were just an emotional wreck.
And that, too. I was gone. And then when he hits it and he sees the whole her whole life, the wedding and everything. And
so it was more about the two of them, not the Ben Affleck... Harry, but, I love you.
No. If I would have said that, then Mac would have said, "Oh my God!"
Right.
But
I'm just oh my godding that Armageddon has not made it into this podcast.
I tell you right now, I love Armageddon.
Oh well, that really explains so much other of your choices in the past. Now,
what do you hear? Number one.
Is it from Con Air? I hope it's from Con Air. Yeah.
Number one is
Optimus Prime. Die Transformers Art. 2.
Is my wife always tells me she's never seen me cry this much in her life when we saw this movie together in 1995 and I sat there blubbering, couldn't breathe. Snot, what's it?
Had she already married you by then?
I knew it, Chris. I knew it.
Are you serious, Steve?
I know what you're going at.
Say it.
Braveheart.
You got it. When he's up on that table getting his shit pulled out, And he sees his dead wife in the crowd. And he's holding the freaking blue rag, and he yells freedom. He looks at her, and the towel drops.
Hey, just because I knew it doesn't mean you're wrong.
I was now maybe for two reasons. I fucking love Mel Gibson, and I was thinking it was him up there, and it was a great fucking movie. William Wallace.
Yep. That was not a shocker.
That's a definite man. That's when that happens and his wife's going by and
Are you okay now?
I'll be back. Hold on.
I think it's funny that Christie's and Matt's had like all funny stuff on it. Not all funny stuff, but
mine's mostly. I mean,
yours is all weepy.
I'm with Matt. This was the hardest list I've ever had to make on this podcast. Now, I do have some honorable mentions.
I doubt that. Now that you had Armageddon on there,
I had Mufasa. On my honorable mention list, I had Quint from Jaws, because seeing that at a young age, hearing the bones crack and the guy gets sucked underwater, fucking scary. I had E.T. I mean, I don't care how old you are, E.T. said.
Even though he comes back as well.
You're right, but at the moment. And this one is for laugh, Bishop.
That's pretty disturbing.
It is. From Aliens, when the first time you see him get torn,
in half,
and the white milk,
he's halfway on the deck, like trying to move around. Come on, now
that is kind of disturbing, and if you're young, it would affect you.
Yeah,
and I guess it did.
I was 13 when I came out, but
I still can't get over Steve picking Artex, because that's we talked about that. That was our first podcast. It was a never-ending story, and we talked about how kind of gut-wrenching that scene was.
Yeah, Chris is getting a little freaked out.
when their eyes bulge, man, there are a few things that are so disturbing.
What's your thoughts of the scene in The Godfather?
Who, Sonny or the horse?
That would have been a memorable one, too.
Yeah.
But
right, true.
Not on anyone's list.
Nobody went back that far, did they?
I
guess I did with Cool Hand Luke.
Yes. When did Cool Hand Luke come out?
68 or so.
Okay. I'm going to match you with my number five.
All right.
My number five and the first horror movie I ever saw. Not that the horror movie deaths are usually something you put on this list. I mean, people die in horror movies all the time. But this death to me was always tragic. And it is from Night of the Living Dead, the original, in 1968. And the character's name is Ben. Ben is played by Dwayne Jones. He's the black guy in Night of the Living Dead. And it always bothered me, seeing this movie when I was little, that this man survives a zombie apocalypse. And he's the only one to survive the zombie apocalypse. And he gets
in
up
Pennsylvania.
In Pennsylvania, in rural Pennsylvania, and is shot in the head the next morning just because somebody you know, thinks he's a zombie, or
yep.
maybe there's even something racial in there. And his body's thrown on the funeral pyre with all the other dead zombies slash victims. And that was always such a horrible, tragic death. So Ben from Night of the Living Dead is my number five. My number four, Steve and I have talked about this at length. And Steve, not only is he the president of the Stallone Club for Men, he's also the president of the Stephen King Club for Men. And my number four is the death of Billy Drayton in the very end of The Mist from 2007. Like we said, there's major spoilers with all these things. But if you've seen The Mist, and I'm not a big Stephen King guy, but that end scene is gut-wrenching. And being a father, seeing that scene had affected me, and it still affects me when I think about that. It's just chilling. The way that movie ends. So I'm not going to go into a whole lot of more detail if you haven't seen it. But that's my number four. My number three was also mentioned by Steve. And it is the death slash murder of Private Mellish in Saving Private Ryan, as played by Adam Goldberg.
Oh, my God.
That, to me, is maybe one of the most real... Not that I've seen someone die in any fashion like this or stabbed to death, but so realistically shot and acted by the actors and Steven Spielberg. Chilling death, especially coming from a man who throughout the movie is so proud of his Jewish heritage and even taunts the Nazi prisoners with his Star of David necklace, to be killed the way he is in the movie always stood out to me as a powerful scene. So that's my number two, or my number three. My number two, I've also probably mentioned in the past in this podcast, it's the death of John Travolta's character by the hands of Bruce Willis in Pulp Fiction. At the time when I saw that, I probably saw that movie a dozen times in the theater.
Oh, yes, I remember this story, Dave.
You'll never get over this, man.
I never get over
this. You're never going to let it go.
They were my two favorite actors at the time. And John Travolta had been on a long down streak as far as movies, and the fact that he was going to be in this and it was major, I was very excited. And we all worked in a movie theater, all of us worked together except for Christy. And one of the usher's jobs in working at a movie theater is to check the film, which means you have to make sure no one's smoking, the lights are good, the sound is good, no one's making out, whatever. And open the doors, walk down the middle aisle, and see Bruce Willis holding a machine gun on John Travolta, who's sitting on a toilet, and blows him away. And this is before I saw the movie, and I was devastated.
You were crushed. You're fucking still crushed.
I still am. Not that it ruined the movie for me, but that has always stuck in my craw since 1994. So that's my number two.
Did I ever tell you my own addition to that, Dave?
No.
My own experience was L.A. Confidential.
Okay.
And why don't we spoil one more movie while we're at it? Kevin Spacey getting gunned down.
You walked because in on it?
It was my turn to walk the theater that time, yep.
The things that movie theater ushers do for the public.
They're heroes, people.
They are.
I know they've been replaced by robots or whatever, but
well, that,
can't surprise a robot.
That's true. That leaves my number one, and it's also from a movie that's been mentioned by Steve, but not the same death. My number one is from 1981's Raiders of the Lost Ark, and it is the murder at the hands of Indiana Jones of the Cairo swordsman.
Ah, yes.
Which isn't sad in the least, but to me is the most memorable death in any movie I've ever seen. The Cairo swordsman going through his shenanigans with the sword back and forth.
That's
and,
good.
And a dysentery infected Harrison Ford pulling out the gun and carelessly blowing him away. That, to me, has always been the greatest movie death in the history of film.
And you know, what's with that guy just shooting people?
You know what, Dave? It's
Guido,
funny.
This guy?
That's true.
That's an early example of taking like a well-worn trope or a cliche and turning it on his head.
Yeah.
It was ahead of its time, really.
And accidental, if you believe all the stories about
food poisoning.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah I've always, I mean, from a young age to the old age that we are now, that one has always stuck out to me. So that's my number one. We all had great list. And if you're listening and feel like making your own list, post it on our Facebook page or something like that. I mean, we'd love to hear what other people have to say. Speaking of our Facebook page, you can become a fan of us on our Facebook page. We have lots of fun things going on there and lots of funny contributors. I love reading all the things that people put up. So thanks to all the people that have done that in the past. And please continue to do so as we continue to put stuff up there for you to comment on. We also are going to be appearing at Wizard World, Philadelphia. We're pretty proud of that they've accepted us as a guest, if you want to call us that. And we're going to be there. The dates on that are June 17th, 18th, and 19th at the Pennsylvania Convention Center on Arch Street in Philadelphia, PA. Go on their website and get yourself some tickets. They're cheaper if you buy them online rather than buying them at the door. We're going to be there. We're going to be giving away prizes, maybe and hopefully even recording a podcast while we're there. So we're going to be snagging people as they walk by, accosting them, and talking some 80s movies with them. And hopefully we don't get in trouble from the people at Wizard World. But, yeah, we're going to go there and plan on just kind of hanging out and having fun with whoever's willing to come over and talk to us. And I think that'll be a lot of people. So
a lot of good stars there, too. Michael Biehn, Billy Dee Williams, Pam Grier, Bruce Campbell, Adam Baldwin, John Schneider.
And Noah Hathaway from Neverending Story. We can ask him about Artex.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can we get Frank Stallone? Any chance?
Oh, if he was
get Frank Stallone, I'm coming up there.
If he was going to be there.
Oh, this just in. Frank Stallone.
So, yeah, and for anything else relating to this show, go on our website, which is gradys.neozaz.com. So, I guess at this point, we are ready to have our next panelist pick, and it is Chris's turn.
God help us all.
God help us all, Chris.
Rocky IV.
Now, before he reveals it, we usually do some guesses. I think I accidentally have just figured out what it is, and so I'm going to keep myself out of this. But anyone else want to take a shot at it?
I think everyone knows.
I'm gonna take a wild guess and say that it starts with an L and ends with an ethyl weapon.
You are correct. If these two
well,
can...
somebody sent me a whole shitload of them, so I guess I'm gonna have to watch my own copy.
Everyone knows I love Mel Gibson. I did Road Warrior already, mm-hmm. and this movie to me is the original buddy cop kind of movie. This started it all.
All right,
it's one of my favorites. It will be yours.
So 1987's Lethal Weapon will be the next film we will be reviewing. I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank Steve for joining us. Steve, this is the second time you've been on, and you've made both podcasts you've been on even better than they would have been had you not been here. So thank you very much.
Well, my pleasure. I think it's my third, actually.
Is it?
Yeah, you made it so memorable.
Who's counting?
But you know what? The third one makes the second one feel like the third one.
That's
and
right.
Really, the first one felt like the second one.
Maybe that other one that I'm forgetting about you didn't make better.
Who's on first?
I probably didn't.
You actually detracted from that one.
What did I talk about? I think that did The Breakfast Club. And damn, I can't remember what the other one was, but I've been drinking beers.
Is that what it is?
But bottom line, it's been good to talk with all of you, and thanks for having me again.
Well, we were honored to have you as the, Mr. President, so, but thank
Call me anytime you have a Stallone entry.
That's true. And there will be more, trust me, Christy.
Why?
Because I was going to make you guys watch Rhinestone, but, Rhinestone's not easy to find.
Oh.
Because, it's so great. To get yourself a copy would cost you about $80, but, thankfully, our former panelist and relative to the show, Karen, said she can get her hands on a copy for each of us.
Oh, good.
So, Karen, if you're listening,
bless you.
I may be contacting you in the very near future.
Mm. At least we got a few weeks before it's your turn again.
That's true.
Dave, could I be selfish and make a plug?
Yes, go for it.
Okay. I co-host Steel Trap Trivia every Wednesday in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania at the Bethlehem Brew Works, which is, I like to think, a very unique bar trivia covering all kinds of subjects. And we give out probably the best prizes in the Lehigh Valley. Certainly we're the most unique. So if you're listening to this and you live in the Lehigh Valley, come join us sometime.
Excellent. And you're also part of a theater troupe as well, Steve. Would you like to plug them as well?
Oh, you mean the Associated Mess?
Yes, I do.
Yes. They're an improv troupe. So they do Whose Line Is It Anyway style games before public audiences. You know, take your suggestions and turn it into stuff. Much funnier, though, than you would see from like Drew Carey or Wayne Brady, I think.
Ooh.
And you can also look for them on Facebook. It's the Associated Mess for their dates and locations.
How about Ryan Stiles?
We're not as tall as him, but we're as funny.
Okay.
And both of those Facebook pages are in our favorite pages on our Facebook page, so make it a little easier for you to find. And
as you are with mine.
Thank you, Steve. Yeah. And there are other Neos as web or podcasts that you can also listen to, including the Trailer Pod Boys and Star Wars in Character. And on Star Wars in Character, we're just taking the more obscure Star Wars characters one by one. Upcoming episodes include the Wampa.
Sure.
There's a beautiful glamour shot of the Wampa, by the way, on Facebook. I didn't know he posed, and I didn't know he was so photogenic either.
Well, we'll be talking at length about all these obscure Star Wars characters, and you can find links to that on our website and on our Facebook page. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next time with Lethal Weapon.
Rising up, back on the street. Did my time, took my chances. Went the distance, now I'm back on my feet. Just a man and his will to survive. Happens too fast. You trade your passion for glory. Don't lose your grip on the dreams of the past. You must fight just to keep